Pepper against Astru, appeal number 12-2261. Mr. Rose?
Good morning. My name is Ashley Rose. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case. Counsel? I would like to characterize the way in which the administrative law judge decided the case and found against Ms. Pepper at the appendix, page 38. I will quote in the middle paragraph. The undersigned, namely ALJ Pope, the undersigned finds the claimant's statements taken together with the medical record show her no more limited than assessed in the residual functional capacity statement. Now, the fact that Judge Pope, ALJ Pope, found that her RFC was of the light exertional level with one major restriction does not mean that he found on the basis of an actual assessment that she could do light work. And I believe that throughout the decision that Judge Pope has rendered, he quite admirably summarizes all of the medical evidence. There's no question that he does that. However, a summary of the medical evidence is not the same thing as an assessment of the medical evidence to the point where a legitimate conclusion could be reached that because of certain limitations based upon medically determinable impairments, that she would or would not be able to perform substantial gainful activity, that is, competitive employment in the national economy, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. You can't just make an assertion that somebody can do that. As an example, the ALJ recognized some of Ms. Pepper's visual impairments, among which was nystagmus. Well, nystagmus is something that could quite seriously bother somebody who is going to be performing sedentary work, especially if you're going to be doing computer work. In Ms. Pepper's testimony, she says herself, quote unquote, I have to get real close to the computer in order to work with it. Nystagmus, of course, is that affliction where your eye involuntarily moves off to the side or up or down. There's various forms of nystagmus. The judge never factored that into his RFC of light work, nor did he, as another example, I'm not going to go through everything that he recognized as medically determinable impairments, severe impairments, but obesity as well as depression were not factored in to these. Now, I know he dismisses depression because he says that there's not enough evidence prior to her date last insured that she was suffering from depression. But he never made an analysis according to the special technique that is required of 404.1520 lowercase a. He never does that. He simply assumes on the basis of what the DDS doctors, non-examining doctors, found that the depression was not severe. And so he assumes that. But even if it wasn't severe, that plus the nystagmus plus the obesity ought to have been assessed as to the limitations that those impairments, both severe and non-severe, would have had upon her ability to function in the workplace.
Mr. Rose, did any doctor offer an opinion about her abilities that was inconsistent with a capacity to do light work?
Well, they didn't say so in so many words. Yes, I believe that that would be true. I think that the doctor, I forget his name, that was her cousin, indicated that she was quite severely limited. Moreover...
Anything else?
Yes. I would suggest that the evidence that was presented in the record, which was available to the ALJ from the Veterans Administration, although most of that evidence was post her DL, her the date last insured, there was evidence of depression prior to the date last insured. There's no question about that. And as a consequence, I cited the case of for this, the ALJ was entitled to do retrospective evaluation. That is, he could have made some conclusions based upon the post-DLI, that's date last insured, post-DLI evidence that could have been extrapolated back to when she was to prior to the DLI. And some of the reasons why she says herself that she couldn't work is that she really demonstrates a lot of paranoia. She doesn't want to go to the grocery store because she doesn't want to meet the people that she used to know. And she lives, of course, out in the West here, where in the rural area, where the area is a little bit, you know, the people know each other a little bit better than they would around in the Chicago area. But the judge didn't do that. He simply relied on the fact that it was post DLI and then didn't consider it. But since we might assume that a person's depression doesn't just miraculously cured after the DLI is established, some of those records would have been, I think, appropriate. And that would be quite supportive of the idea that she was not able to work even at the light level. Now, the summary of the evidence, as I have indicated, does not really constitute an assessment of her ability to function. And this is particularly true with regard to the credibility issue. As I pointed out in my brief, the ALJ utilizes the boilerplate that has been, which I like to call, struck down by the case of Bjornsson versus Astru. It's indicating that Mrs. Pepper's statements are not credible to the extent that they are inconsistent with the RFC. When that is the case, it has been backwards. The judge has already formulated his idea of what she can do, and then everything else is struck down, is not recognized. But he doesn't show any evidence as to why a person with 296.7P, SSR 96.7P, why that those statements are inconsistent, and particularly which ones are. Hey, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rose. For Pelley Astru, Ms. Kenny Kleinman.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Ann Kenny Kleinman on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. As Your Honor noticed, there is no physician opinion here that the claimant, Ms. Pepper, was disabled. And other than some visual limitations mentioned by Dr. Brody, which are consistent with the ALJ's decision, there were really no other work limitations. Most importantly, Ms. Pepper and her husband both presented either testimony or written statements regarding her abilities to sit, stand, walk, lift. All of those statements were consistent with the ALJ's finding for a light exertional ability to work, and certainly consistent with the ability to do sedentary work and her sedentary past relevant work, which was the basis of the ALJ's decision. Ms. Pepper argues that the ALJ didn't base his decision on any real assessment. He just made an assertion. But that's not true. The ALJ carefully went through the medical evidence of the record. The ALJ went through the opinion evidence to the extent that it existed. The ALJ went through the claimant's statements, her husband's testimony. The ALJ considered in full the entire record, and then he made the RFC finding. The ALJ did consider many of the claimant's impairments at Step 2 and at Step 4. The ALJ found she had several impairments that were non-severe, such as mitral valve prolapse and high cholesterol. She doesn't allege that she's disabled due to these. Nobody opined that she had any limitations due to these. And importantly, the ALJ considered them at Step 4 in evaluating her residual functional capacity.
The ALJ didn't go through the special technique for the depression evidence.
The ALJ did not make the findings in the 4B criteria as typically set out. The ALJ did, however, consider the functioning in each of those areas when he was discussing her RFC. The ALJ found that with regard to her daily activities, which is the first B criteria, that she had a relatively busy day. And he went through a blow-by-blow, hour-by-hour description of those activities and that busy day. With regard to social functioning, which is the second criteria under the B criteria, the ALJ discussed that she testified she distrusted other people. She didn't want to be around them. With regard to the third B criteria, which is concentration, persistence, and pace, the ALJ discussed her testimony that she had difficulty focusing and concentrating when she was doing her housework. And as far as episodes of decompensation, which is the final criteria, the ALJ noted there were no evidence of any episodes. She was treated on and off at most for some depression. He said she saw a counselor while she was working through her employee assistance program, and she took Paxil, which apparently helped. So the ALJ, although he didn't specifically delineate findings with regard to the B criteria, he did assess those four areas that are considered under the B criteria. And most importantly, once you get past the B criteria, if you're evaluating a mental impairment, you then have to go and look at the RFC and how does the person's functioning affect her residual functional capacity. And when the ALJ evaluated her RFC, he considered all the evidence of her depression. The ALJ considered her testimony. He considered the medical evidence, the testimony, which mostly I've already discussed, but the medical evidence included VA notes that said she had depression on some screening assessments, but it was stable on Paxil. The ALJ also considered her cousin's statement that she had low self-esteem. The ALJ considered Dr. Lee's exam that showed no abnormalities in mood, in memory, in insight, in judgment. The ALJ considered Dr. Gooder's report that said she didn't want any counseling, she didn't want any medication at a time when she was quote-unquote feeling blue. The ALJ considered the lack of significant treatment for depression. The ALJ considered, again, as I previously stated, that she had some visits under her employee assistance program while she was working. The ALJ also considered the state agency psychologist's opinions, who said there was insufficient evidence of a medically determinable mental impairment prior to her date last insured. So even though the ALJ did not make specific findings concerning the B criteria, the ALJ went through the proper analysis, and he considered all the evidence and reasonably found that her depression was not a severe impairment and that it did not impose any restrictions on her RFC. Pepper argues that the ALJ could have considered evidence that postdated her date last insured and brought it back into the, or related it back to the time before her date last insured. But that evidence was from 2009-2010, which was 2 to 3 years after her date last insured. And if her condition worsened, as it may have, and she sought treatment, which is why she sought treatment, I believe, in 2009-2010, a post date last insured worsening is not relevant to a pre-date last insured functioning. The ALJ also considered Ms. Pepper's obesity. Even though Pepper argues that the ALJ didn't factor it into his analysis, the ALJ did. The ALJ noted that several physicians reported she was overweight. She had gained 34 pounds, and she lost them, same 34 pounds. The ALJ noted that she complained that her weight gain was due to medication side effects. And the ALJ noted that her cousin stated that he found it difficult to evaluate her range of lumbar motion due to her weight. That was obviously before she lost the 34 pounds that she had gained. So the ALJ did consider the obesity in evaluating her residual functional capacity. Most importantly, she said that she could walk a mile to a mile and a half, according to her and her husband, at a time, regardless of any obesity. She could sit for 2 hours at a time, 3 hours a day. She could lift up to 20 pounds. So any limitations that she said she had due to obesity, or that she's now arguing she has, they didn't prevent her from doing the requirements of sedentary work or sedentary jobs that she had in the past.
Counsel, could you briefly address the ALJ's treatment of the credibility question?
Yes. The ALJ used boilerplate. It's undisputed. The question is whether that boilerplate or the use of the boilerplate requires an automatic remand, and this court has held that it doesn't. What this court is concerned with is an explanation regarding the credibility findings. And here the ALJ did explain why he found her not credible. He went through that her daily activities showed she was just busy all day long.
The following paragraph after the boilerplate.
Yeah, there's a whole big section.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
How much time? 1 minute, Mr. Rose, if you'd like it, if you don't need to use it.
Again, I would just reiterate that summarizing the evidence is not the same thing as assessing the evidence, so that how does the ALJ know how long she – he doesn't do that. How long can she sit? How long can she stand? Can she actually do what counsel has just said? Actually, when it comes to that walking a mile and a half, that was back in 2007 at appendix page 30, page 30.
Last insured, right?
Excuse me?
That was when she was last insured?
No, this was before that. I believe that's right. Yes, that's correct. I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. Appendix page 30, 35. But just to put these things down, for example, the minimal ADLs, she didn't go to the doctor. She didn't treat. But the judge, in that paragraph where he talks about some of those things, he doesn't raise the question why. So those aren't the same things.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rose. The case is taken under advisement.